Good evening, family. My name is Derek, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to thank Bill for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I hope something is said or read tonight will change your life. I'm sober today by the grace and mercy of a loving God of my own understanding. If you be new or relatively new like myself, I say welcome to this program. And I like to say that this program works based on my own experience, not somebody else's. And what we do is we share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. What it was like for me was probably what it was like for a lot of you in this room. It was a whole lot of insanity. I mean, a whole lot of insanity. It's a whole lot of paranoia and a whole lot of fear. And I don't know when, and I don't know where, and I don't know if it was the old English 800, the Jack Daniels, the Cisco, the cocaine, the meth. I don't know what it was that made me cross the invisible line. I don't. I know one thing and one thing only, that I'm on the other side. I've crossed over into a dimension for which there is no return. The book says science may one day accomplish it, but it hadn't done so yet. I say I'm sober by the grace and mercy of a loving God of my own understanding because you people taught me that grace was unmerited favor. What does that mean? It means I didn't do anything to earn this. I hear people say, you know, I earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I understand why you say that, but that's just not my experience. See, because I didn't do anything so honorable, so dignified, so respectable that I could say I earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, because if you be in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and you haven't had a drink today, you're in the best place on planet Earth. So I didn't do anything to earn my seat here. What I earned was for my children to wish they had another man to call their father. That's what I earned. What I earned was for my parents to hope to God I don't come nowhere near the block on Christmas. That's what I earned. If the judge would have gave me one day in jail for every crime that I committed while I was drinking and using, what I earned was back-to-back life sentences. That's what I earned. I didn't earn this. I didn't earn the right to come to a place like this with people like me that share a common problem with a common solution. I don't know. I'm still amazed. I'm still amazed. You know, I don't know about you, but, you know, for me to be able to show up, somebody asked me to be somewhere months ago, and for me to be able to show up on the day and the time they asked me to be here, I'm still fucking amazed. I don't know about you. I'm amazed. If you come from where I come from, you can't ask me the day before to be somewhere the next day, and I actually make it there on time. So I'm still amazed. Grace. Unmerited favor. I said I was sober by the mercy of a loving God of my own understanding. Mercy. Mercy. Maybe a few of you have been in front of the judge once or twice, like myself. You know, once or twice, you know. And you know when you go in front of the judge and this time they got you, you know. I'm not talking about when you can plea bargain when the witnesses don't show up. I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about when you know they got you. You know, when they read count one, count two, count three, count four, and you know you did all that. You say, Your Honor, I'd like to plead guilty, and I throw myself on the mercy of the court. What am I saying? I'm saying I did all that stuff you just read. Just please don't give me what I deserve. If there's any truth to what goes around comes around, God, please don't give me what I deserve. Please don't let come back to me the harm that I caused other people when I was drinking and using. Please don't let somebody do to my children what I did to other people's children when I was drinking and using. God, please don't let nobody do to my parents what I did to other people's parents when I was drinking and using. I need some mercy. There's some people in here that need some mercy. God, please just don't give me what I deserve. I'm sober today by grace and mercy of a loving God of my own understanding, and I found him right here in these rooms. I'd like to tell you a little story. My sister, who adopted me in this program, she died 20 years sober of a motorcycle accident. Her name was Dr. Yvonne P. And she used to tell this story about a little Native American boy and a stockbroker on the streets of New York. There's a little Native American boy and a stockbroker, and they were standing on the streets of New York. And if any of you ever been to New York, it's busy. It's loud, things is moving fast, people is moving around, and the stockbroker and the little Native American boy were standing there, and the little Native American boy looked at the stockbroker and he said, "Shh, did you hear that? Did you hear? Or did you hear?" And then the stockbroker said, "Hear what?" He said, "Did you hear the cricket? Did you hear the cricket?" And the stockbroker said, "No, I didn't hear no cricket." And the little Indian boy said, "Come with me." And he took the stockbroker down the street, down an alley, up a flight of stairs. And at the top of the stairs was a flower pot. He picked up the flower pot, and there was the cricket. And the stockbroker said, "Now how in the hell did you hear that?" And the little Native American boy started laughing, and he said, "It was simple." And he put the flower pot back over the cricket. He took him back down the flight of stairs. He took the stockbroker back down the street to the spot where they first stood. And as they were walking, he stuck his hand in his pocket and he pulled out a silver dollar. And when he pulled out the silver dollar, he took it and then he flicked it up in the air. And the stockbroker turned around and looked right at it. And the little Indian boy said, "See, you hear what you're listening for. If you're here tonight, I'm going to share with you, you're going to hear what you're listening for. If you came here to hear me say something you haven't found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll hear that. If you came here to hear me say something that you don't necessarily agree with, you'll hear that. But if you came to hear the message of recovery, you'll hear that too. See, you're going to hear what you're listening for. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to treatment, my first treatment program, in 1988. Yeah, I know. Look at y'all. I see some of y'all. You said 1988. Some of y'all wasn't even born in 1988. You're looking at me like, 1988? Yeah, I was already toe up from the flow up in 1988. I went to my first treatment program in 1988. I'm a United States veteran, and it was at the VA hospital. And when I checked myself into treatment, back then they didn't have a program for other substances. See, I identify as an alcoholic, but it took a whole lot of little white rocks to help me realize that I was an alcoholic. That's just my story. That's just my truth. So when I went to this program, I knew I had a problem with other substances, but I did not believe I was an alcoholic. I didn't believe I was an alcoholic. But they said, if you want to get help and you want to get in this program, you have to stand up and say you're an alcoholic. And so I did that. I stood up for 28 days, every day, and I said, "Hi, I'm Derek, I'm an alcoholic. Hey, nice to meet you, I'm Derek, I'm an alcoholic. Hey, I'm Derek, I'm an alcoholic." Because you stand up in a meeting and say you're an alcoholic, that don't make you an alcoholic. You better find out what your truth is. You better find out what your truth is, because my truth won't keep you sober. In fact, your truth won't keep you sober. See, truth is a point of reference. If you can't figure out where you've been, you can't figure out where you need to go. If you don't comprehend the problem, how can you go after the solution with the necessary fervor that it takes for this program to consummate itself in your life? You better find out what your truth is. Maybe you be an alcoholic, maybe you be an addict, or maybe you're just around here wasting some good party time. Find out what your truth is. So I stood up and I said I was an alcoholic, and I got out of that program 28 days later. And 28 days after I got out of that program, they told me some things when I was in there. They said, go to meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps, be of service, find you a God. Well, I wasn't doing hardly none of that. When I got out of that program, I couldn't go to no meetings because I didn't have time. I don't know about you, but when I go into treatment, I'm tore up. When I get out, I got to make some money. I got to come up. I got stuff to do. I don't know. When I get to the program, I'm tore up from the floor up. But as soon as I get a watch, I got somewhere to be. I couldn't spend time in these meetings, you know what I mean? And get a sponsor. What? Wait a minute. I don't like people telling me what to do. I don't like people telling me what to do. Bill's wife said the same thing to me. She don't like people telling her what to do. I didn't want nobody telling me what to do. I didn't like my mama telling me what to do when I was a child. I didn't like my daddy telling me what to do. I didn't like the military telling me what to do. I didn't like the COs in jail telling me what to do. I don't like to be told what to do. So I could not even comprehend coming in here asking one of y'all to tell me what to do. That didn't even make no sense to me. So I got out of that program, and I wasn't going to no meetings. I wasn't working no steps. I didn't get no sponsor. I just wasn't going to drink or use no matter what. And after I did that, I was dry for about 90 days. And then I decided that my high school was having this reunion at this nightclub in Los Angeles. Back then it was called the Red Onion. Oh, some of y'all been there, huh? Okay. So I was gonna go to the Red Onion and see, when I went to the Red Onion, I knew I had to devise a plan. See, because I was one of those young men at a very young age that had his own business in high school. That's right, I had my own business when I was in high school. I was an agricultural commodity broker. All right, I sold weed, you know what I'm saying? But I like telling people I was an agricultural commodity broker because it made me feel like somebody. Yeah, see, my problem is of a much deeper nature. So because I had inherited a reputation for having good, very good products and services, I knew what was going to happen when I went into the club. So I walked into the club and I went straight up to the bartender. I said, "Bartender, give me a Coke." And he brought me a Coke. When he brought me a Coke, I gave him $20. And when he got ready to bring me back my change, I did like this. And I walked away. Why? Because I was setting the stage. I was putting the players in place. Because I knew what was going to happen when my friends seen me. When they see me, they first thing they do is they say, "D, baby, what's going on, man?" I'm like, "I'm good, man." "Well, man, I know you got that good, man. Blaze one." "Nah, I'm good right now, man, but let's get a drink." I take him over, I wait for my bartender. I say, "Bartender, my man right here, whatever you want. Give me another one of what I'm having." And it worked. He brought him a drink and he brought me a Coke. Cool, now I ain't gotta say I'm an alcoholic. So I'm getting everybody in the club faded but me. Everybody I see, they like, "Gee, baby, man, I know you got it, blaze it." I'm like, "Nah, I'm good right now, man, but let's go get a drink." I go back to my bartender. "Bartender, give my folks whatever they want. Give me another what I'm having." And it's working real well. I'm getting everybody drunk in the club but me. And it worked real well till about midnight. Yeah. That's when I bumped into her. Oh, yeah. Y'all know who her is, right? Her was the one. I'm talking about the one back in school, you know, the one you really wanted, the one, you know, you might have got her hair done, you got her nails done, you bought her some jewelry, and she ain't never give you none? Yeah, it's a couple of hers in here right now. I know a her when I see one. It's a couple of y'all in here right now. Yeah, her did me like that. Her did me like that. But I bumped into her at midnight, and when I seen her, she came up to me. She said, look here, D. She said, "I know I played a lot of games with you back in the day." She said, "But tonight it's on." She said, "Tonight at 12 o'clock midnight, me and you going to go get a bottle of champagne, and we're going to toast. And after that, we're going to go to the motel, and we're going to handle that business." I need to let you know, at that moment, I was no longer an alcoholic. At that moment, I ceased being an alcoholic. At that moment, I was ready to make the supreme sacrifice. Now, don't get it twisted. If she would have said, at 12 o'clock midnight, "We're going to take a hit off this pipe," I'd have said, "Oh, no, we're not." You know why? Because when I went into treatment, I had admitted to my innermost self that I had a problem with other substances. But but I wasn't convinced I was an alcoholic. So at 12 o'clock midnight, me and baby took a toast. I still remember what the glasses sounded like when we toasted. It went, ting! And I took a sip. And at 12:15, I was on Jefferson and Western at the Rock House. Now, I never did get another baby. And since I've been sober, I've been looking for her ass. Ooh. That's another story, though. That's another story. What I'm trying to get you to see is that shit don't mean nothing to you till it means something to you. Shit don't mean something to you till it means something to you. All of these cliches you hear around here, keep coming back, more will be revealed one day at a time, that don't mean nothing to you till it means something to you. Until you can go back in your past and match up your experience with these cliches, they don't become real. I know what happens when I take a drink. I know what the phenomena of craving is, not because I read it in the book, not because you talked about it in a book study. I know what the phenomena of craving is because it happened to me. Once I took a drink, I was powerless to go do what I said I would never do again. So I go back into treatment in 1989. And this time, I'm sweetly reasonable. Yeah, this time I'm gonna come to these meetings. But I ain't gonna get no sponsor and I ain't gonna work no steps. Shortly after that, I got loaded. I go back to another program in 1990, and this time, I'm gonna get me a sponsor, and I'm gonna work the steps, but I'm not gonna come to meetings because I don't want y'all to know I relapsed. Shortly after that, I got loaded. I go back to another program in 1991, and this time, I'm gonna work the steps and go to meetings and not get a sponsor. Shortly after that, I got loaded. I go back to another program in 1992, and this time, I'm gonna go to meetings and have a sponsor and not work the steps. Shortly after that, I got loaded. I go back to another program in 1993. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? I tried this thing every imaginable way, but the result was nil until I let go absolutely. Now, I'm not going to come in here and tell you, you better get a sponsoring, you better work the steps, and you better keep doing the meetings, because I don't know what you got to do. I know what I got to do. I got to keep coming to meetings so I can see what happened to people who stopped coming to meetings. I got to have a sponsor, because I need somebody on planet Earth that knows the whole truth about me. See, some people make too big a deal about this sponsor thing. See, a sponsor is just somebody that's on the same road that you on. They just a little bit further ahead. And every now and then, they'll pick up the phone and call you and tell you, you better slow down and pump your brakes because there's some curves coming up. And I got to work these steps because I got to face and be rid of those things that block me from God. What it was like for me. Between going in and out of these programs, I took a hostage. That was my ex-wife. And she gave me a son. And so I was going to try another program between the last two programs. I was on another program called the Cognac Marijuana Maintenance Program. Some of y'all been on that program? That's where you're going to drink and smoke, but you ain't going to mess with no drugs. I was on that program. So I'm at the park because I'm trying to be a father. He's my namesake. He's my junior. Trying to be a father, because in it, you know, when I go on a run, I abandon everybody, and then when I come back, I want to be dad. So I'm trying to be a father to this child, and me and my son is at the park, and I'm teaching him how to catch a football, playing, taking him, pushing him on the swing, and we having a good time. We having a great time, and then my son comes up to me, and he starts coughing. He says, Daddy, my throat is hurting. And I said, don't worry about it. You know, I'm his daddy. I think I got some power. I go over to the ice cream truck. I buy him a popsicle. I say, suck on this. You're going to be all right. I'm pushing him around on the merry-go-round, spinning him around. We running, playing tag. We having a good time. And he keeps coming up to me, and he says, Daddy, but my throat is hurting me. And I said, don't worry about it, son, you know, because I think I got some power. I'm his daddy. So I say, it's time for us to go home. I swing by the store. I pick up some cough drops. I say, suck on these. You're going to be all right. We get home. Time for him to take his bath. Goes and takes his bath, and he comes out. When he comes out of the bathroom, he can't talk. He's going, daddy, daddy. And I'm his dad. I think I got some power. I say, don't worry about it. I run to the store, and I go get some chloraseptic. I spray it in his throat. I tuck him in the bed. I kiss him on his forehead, and I tell him, you're going to be all right, because I'm his daddy, and I think I got some power. And then right around midnight, my son stopped breathing. Now you running around here talking about you powerless. Oh, I'm powerless over the man. I'm powerless over my job. I'm powerless over the counselors. Do you really believe you powerless? If you really believe you powerless, find something in your life that you really powerless over. I know what powerlessness is for me. Powerlessness is watching my baby die. But because I think I got some power, because I'm his daddy, I pick up his body, I give him mouth to mouth, and I rush him to the hospital. When I get to the hospital, I start telling everybody what to do. You go get a doctor. You go get a gurney. And they said, no, this is what you're going to do. You're going to sign this paper that's going to allow us to give your son a tracheotomy. That's a hole in his throat, else he's going to die. And you be an addict like me? When you run out of solutions, you'll take a suggestion. So I sign the paper. And I do what I always do when my back is against the wall. I said, where's the chapel? Because I need to pray. They directed me to the chapel. When I walk down the hallway and I walk into the chapel, and my hands are trembling. I got tears streaming down my face. And I fall before the altar, and I prayed the most honest prayer I've ever prayed in my life. I'm not talking about that drug prayer where you say, let the dope man be there at 2 in the morning, I'm going to buy 120 and I'm going to go home. Let me just get one more drink before I leave. I'm not talking about that kind of prayer. I'm talking about the kind of prayer only a parent can pray when a child's life is on the line. That's the prayer I prayed that day. With every fiber of my being, I said, God, if you let my baby live. You got to understand, he's my only son. He's my firstborn. He carries my name. God, please let my baby live. If you let my baby live, God, I will never get loaded again. And I meant it. If you let him live, I will never get loaded again. I got up off my knees and I went back into the emergency room, and God saw fit to intervene. They didn't have to cut a hole in his throat. They took a tube and stuck it down his nose, in his throat, into his lungs so he could breathe. And they put him in an oxygen tent for 2 weeks. And I stayed at the hospital for 2 weeks. I'm not talking about leaving and going. I'm talking about I don't leave the hospital. His mama got to bring me a change of clothes. I'm not leaving my baby. This my boy. I'm not leaving my baby. I stay at the hospital by his bedside, day in, day out, praying, God, please save my boy. God, please save my boy. God, please save my boy. And at the end of 2 weeks, the doctors came to me. And they said, we don't really know what happened. We really can't explain it. But your son is going to be perfectly fine. And I said, thank you, God. And they took him out of intensive care. And they put him in pediatrics. And I said, thank you, God. And then they took the tube out of his nose, out of his lungs, and he could breathe on his own. And I said, thank you, God. And then they took him out of the oxygen tent. And he was breathing on his own. And I said, thank you, God. And then I left the hospital when I went and got loaded. Now understand what I'm saying. I didn't leave the hospital and go get loaded because I didn't mean that prayer I prayed. I didn't leave the hospital and go get loaded because I was playing games with God. I left the hospital and got loaded because I'm an alcoholic. And in and of myself, my disease don't care what promises I make or who I make them to. See, while I was by his bed saying, by his bedside saying, God, please spare my boy. God, please spare my boy. God, please spare my boy. I forgot to say, God, please save my own ass. See, you can be doing all the right things in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can be sponsoring people. You can be a counselor. You can be speaking on panels. You can be doing all that and still mess around and get loaded. While you out here carrying the message, you might want to check your plug. While you out here being of service, you might want to check your plug because you might be disconnected. The book says we cannot transmit what we do not have. See, when I got out of jail, I remember when I first got a house and a refrigerator, I filled my refrigerator up with all types of zoom zooms and wham wham. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. Okay, so yeah, I filled my refrigerator up with all kinds of stuff. Anything I could think I want was in my refrigerator. But if you mess around and pull the plug from the refrigerator, everything's going to start to spoil. And it don't go all bad at once. First the dairy go bad, then the meat go bad, and it starts spoiling. If you mess around and pull the plug from the power that keeps you sober, everything in your life is going to spoil. And it don't go all bad at once. First you start getting into conflicts with people. You become restless, irritable, and discontent. You can't get along with nobody. All of a sudden, everything starts to irritate you. If you're going through that cycle right now, check your plug. You might be disconnected. You better get plugged into a power that's going to give you the power to stay sober one day at a time. This program is amazing. I don't want y'all to think I'm somebody else. I need to tell you what it was really like. I come from sleeping under the freeway. When I got here, I was homeless. I had a pair of jeans, a dirty yellow sweatshirt, and one white t-shirt that was filthy and nasty to my name. I was sleeping under the 101 freeway. I had found a mattress that had fell off a truck, and I took the mattress and I put it up against the wall sideways, and I didn't sleep on the mattress. I slept between the wall and the mattress because I didn't want nobody to see how bad I had gotten. I had a rash on the bottom half of my body because I hadn't had a bath in months. I didn't get here wearing no jewelry and driving no fancy cars. I'm a hope to die drug addict and alcoholic. I'm the real one. I'm the guy at the gas station with his hair matted to his head, with dingleberries hanging off his beard. My jeans look like they shining right here because I done been inside the pocket so many times. I'm greasy and dirty like a filling station mop. I'm the guy that runs up and says, can I pump your gas? I probably pump some of y'all shit. Y'all just don't recognize me because I clean up pretty well. You know what I'm saying? I'm that guy. I know who I am. I came out of one of those treatment programs when I was unwilling to go to meetings, work the steps, get a sponsor, and find a God. I came out of one of those treatment programs and I went on a run. It was a bad run. And I had been out for days. I hit a lick and I checked into a motel. When I checked into this motel, I'm drinking and I'm using and I'm going insane. See, first when I start off, I gotta find her. Cause I need her to get down with me. And then I get super paranoid and I gotta put her out because she messing up my high. So she gotta go. But then I get super spooked that she's going to bring the jackers back, and now I'm super paranoid. So now what I do, I take the dresser and I push it in front of the door. I got to secure the room, so I take the sheet off the bed, and I hang it up over the windows because I don't need y'all to see the flame flickering. I try to take a shower, but I'm so paranoid. I got one leg in the shower and one leg out the shower, and I'm doing this because I'm spooked. I'm in this room, and I still don't realize what I'm suffering from. I don't think I'm an alcoholic, because I don't drink like I smoke. I don't think that I'm an alcoholic, because I ain't never sold the television to get a 40 ounce. I don't know, maybe one of y'all did that. That ain't my story. So I'm in this room, and I'm spooked. And what do? After I put her out, I got to turn on the naughty flicks. And so I'm watching these naughty flicks, and as I'm watching them, I'm drinking and I'm using, and I get so spooked, I think I see my wife in the video. I think it's my wife in the video. So I go to the motel manager and I pay him $20 to run this movie over and over and over. And I'm drinking and I'm using and I'm driving myself insane. I'm looking for the birthmark. I'm looking for the wedding ring. I am convinced that this is my wife in the video. Now, mind you, I've been gone for some days now. I ain't been home. It's Sunday. Forgot to tell y'all about the hostage I took that was my wife. She was my high school sweetheart. She don't drink. She don't smoke. She go to church 3 times a week and twice on Sunday. She was a virgin when I met her, and I knew she had a God. But my mind has convinced me, because I cannot differentiate the truth from the false, that this woman is in this video. And what they're doing to her, these two men in this video, is driving me insane. I leave the motel and I go home. It's Sunday morning. When I get home, she's not there. Why? Because she's at church. So I call the church. And I say, tell my wife to get on the phone. They say, sir, service is going on. I say, I don't give a... Go get my wife. They put my wife on the phone, and I said, get home and get home now, because I am insane. She comes home, and when she comes home, she walks through the door and she says, what is wrong? I said, I sent you in that video. And she looked at me and she said, what video? And I told her what video I saw her in, and she said, you really have lost your mind. The next thing I know, a series of events took place because I'm insane. A flashbang comes through the window. The police search my house. They arrest me. They take me to jail. They take me to the substation. From the substation, I go to 9500 block downtown in LA. And when I leave 9500 block, they send me up to Supermax. I'm being charged with spousal abuse, spousal battery, assault with a deadly weapon, and false imprisonment. When I go to court, I got a violent crime against a woman. I got a woman judge, a woman prosecutor, and I got a violent crime against a woman who has never had a traffic ticket. They wanted to wash me. My wife refused to testify, so they got the doctor to testify. The doctor testified that I had hit my wife somewhere between 30 and 50 times, and she was unrecognizable in a coma. I don't know what you'll do. I'm going to tell you what I'll do under the influence of alcohol. I will kill somebody that I love, that has bore my children. You can play with this disease if you want to. after I got out of the gym. This same woman came back to me. And what do? I build her dreams up. I get a house and a car and a job. And then I go get loaded again. I tear everything down. Because I'm an alcoholic. And I don't know I'm an alcoholic. And I think I can drink like normal people. But my drinking leads me to other things that take me out of my character and make me do things I promised I would never do again. This is a cold disease. It's deadly. If not to you, to the people that you love. So what happens? What happens is one of the treatment programs that I was in before, a guy that I had went to elementary school and high school with, that we used to transact business when I was an agricultural commodity broker. He was in the same treatment program with me. It was called PATH. And we got out of that program together, and he stayed sober and I didn't. And after I was out there for weeks and months, dirty and filthy and nasty, I tried to check myself in to the Salvation Army. And when I went there, they said, "I'm sorry, sir." They gave me a urinalysis and they said, "The level of toxins in your body is too high and you got to go to detox before you can come to this program." And I didn't have nowhere else to go. So I called my buddy up and I said, "Look here, man, I'm trying to get in this program. I really need to get my life together. And they won't let me in for 3 days. Can you help me?" And he came and he picked me up, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he took me to his home. And he said, "Man, sit right here on the couch. And I got to call my sponsor." And I said, "Call your sponsor?" I said, "Wait a minute. We go back 20 years. You my boy. You my dog. What you got to call your sponsor for?" He said, "Because I need to check with him before I let you stay here." And he called this guy on the phone. And he asked him if I could stay there. And his sponsor told him to give me the phone. And he handed me the phone. And I said, "Yeah, this is Derek." And he said, "I know who you are." He said, "I know all about you." He said, "Your boy told me everything about you. And I know y'all go way back and y'all buddies and y'all all the way go back to the turf. I know all that." He said, "But let me tell you this. If you stay at his house and you get him loaded, I'm going to mess you up." He said, "I might make amends to you after you get out of the hospital, but I'm going to fuck you up." And I'm looking at the phone like, "Do he know who he talking to?" And I hand the phone back to my homeboy, and he was like, "Okay, Spons, okay, yeah." And he gets off the phone, he says, "Yeah, you can stay." And he let me take a shower, the first shower I'd had in months. He gave me clean underwear and clean t-shirt, some clean socks. And he let me sleep in his bed for 3 days, and he fed me soup and vegetables and nursed me back to health. A member of this program. And after 3 days, he took me back to the Salvation Army. And when I got to the Salvation Army, they let me in. When they let me in, after I'd been there for 2 weeks, they said, "You have to get a sponsor in this program that has at least 5 years of recovery." And I didn't know nobody that had 5 years of recovery. So I picked up the phone and I called my homeboy. And I said, "Hey man, can you give me that dude's number that said he was gonna fuck me up?" He gave me his phone number. And I called him, and when I called him, I said, "Hey, this is Derek." He said, "I know who you are." He said, "Why are you calling me?" I said, "Well, you know, sir, I wanna know if you'll sponsor me." He said, "Sponsor you?" He said, "You don't even know me." He said, "You never even met me." He said, "If I was standing next to you on the sidewalk, you wouldn't even recognize me. Why do you want me to sponsor you?" And I broke down in tears and I said, "Because I want somebody to care about me the way you care about him. Because Because I didn't have nobody that was riding for me like that. When I got here, wasn't nobody riding for me. My family wasn't riding for me. My friends wasn't riding for me. I didn't have nobody. And I asked this man that I'd never met because I needed somebody to care. And a member of Alcoholics Anonymous said, yeah, I'll sponsor you. And he spoon-fed me this program. I met him every Thursday night at his house, and he took me through the 12 steps. I got a commitment. I got a God. I became of service. And that man has been my sponsor for 28 years. That's what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I checked myself into the Salvation Army, I share this part of my story. How much time I got left?
All night.
I don't want to keep y'all all night. I share this part of my story because it might be somebody in here that felt like I felt. See, when I went into treatment in 1988, you guys told me to do some things. You told me to find a God. That's difficult for a person like me. See, because I don't understand God the way y'all understand God. Some of y'all know who God is. Some of y'all know what his name is. You know what religion he's in. You know how to pray to him. You know all that. I don't understand God the way you understand God. See, because when I was a child, I was baptized Catholic. I went to Catholic school. I wore those little salt and pepper pants, that little pinstripe shirt. And I believed in that God because I had childlike faith. And then one day my mother came to me and she said, "Ooh, time out, son. We're not going to be Catholics no more. We're going to be Muslims." I didn't even know what a Muslim was. All I knew was that I couldn't eat bacon, I couldn't celebrate Christmas, and I couldn't date white women, none of which sounded attractive to me. So we became Muslims. And then as I got older, I met my ex-wife, and I told you she was a Christian. And she was the closest thing to God I'd ever seen. So when you people told me I needed to find God, when I went in that program, I couldn't make a connection with God because, see, my understanding of God was screwed up. I had been introduced to so many religions from the time I was a child till I became a man. I just couldn't get with y'all God. I couldn't understand God the way you did. When I got out of that treatment program in 88, I looked for God. I went back to the Catholic Church. They told me to go to confession. I did the Hail Marys and the Our Fathers on the rosary beads. Shortly after that, I got loaded. When I went back in 1989, I went back looking for God. I said, the reason why I can't stay sober, I know why, because I didn't go back to the nation. So I went back to the Nation of Islam. I took my Shahada. I made Salat. I prayed on my face 5 times a day. I read. I fasted. I did everything they told me to do. I stopped eating pork. I did everything they told me to do. And shortly after that, I got loaded. So I said, I know why I can't stay sober. Y'all know why I can't stay sober, right? Because I ain't been saved. That's got to be the reason. I can't stay sober because I ain't been saved. So when I got out that next treatment program, I went back to the Christian church. They laid hands on me. They prayed the demons out of me. I got baptized, anointed with oil, filled with the Holy Ghost. I spoke in tongues. I did all that shit, and then I got loaded. Now, I'm not telling you that religion don't work. Don't misunderstand me. I am not telling you that religion don't work. In fact, when you read the big book, it says we need to be quick to see where religious people have been right all along. So I'm not telling you that religion don't work. I'm telling you it didn't work for me. And the reason why it didn't work for me is because I didn't believe it deep down in my gut. See, that Catholic God, that's my daddy's God. That Muslim God, that's my mama's God. That Christian God, that's my ex-wife's God. But where was my God? I didn't have no God. My conception of God was everybody I thought was godly. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God in his infinite wisdom, he saw fit to create a place like this for people like us so we could find our way back home. I don't know what the steps are for you, but the steps for me are a path back to God. I'm in the Salvation Army. I go in the quietness of my own space in a bathroom stall. And I get on my knees. And I get honest with God. I'm talking about the book says you got to be rigorously honest. I'm not talking about faking the funk in front of the people. I'm talking about you and your creator. I got with God and I said, look here, God. I don't know what your name is. I don't know what religion you really in. All I know, God, is that I need you and I need you now. And if you don't stand between me and the next drink, I'm going to get drunk. That's as honest as I can be. I don't know. And I made a deal with God. August 14th, 1993. I said, look here, God. The next time I think about getting loaded, I'm going to pray. But you better take the thought away. Because if you don't, I'm going to get loaded. See, I have given up on myself. I do not have the power to keep me sober. I have to get in touch with a power that's going to give me the power to stay sober. And after I made that deal with God, I got up off my knees. And I said, thank you, Father, in the name of Jesus, Allah Akbar, because I didn't want to leave nobody out, just in case. Because I didn't know. And I'm here to share with you, you ain't got to know what God's name is. All you got to do is know what he does. He takes the worst of us. He brings out the best in us. And he sits us in front of us. And he says, look what I can do with a life if you give me a chance. Find you a God of your own understanding. Find you a God of your own understanding. And your conception of God is sufficient enough for you, just like mine is for me. You ain't got to believe what your mama believe. You ain't got to believe what your husband or your wife believe. Find you a God of your own understanding, and your conception of God is sufficient enough for you, just like mine is for me. And if you can't find a God that you understand, hell, find a God that understands you. Find a God that understands you don't understand. And ask that God to help you recreate your life. Find the God that led you to this meeting tonight and call it God and say, God, whatever you did for me today, can you please do for me tomorrow? And ask that God to help you build a relationship. See, because this relationship with your creator is the essence of what keeps us sober. Because there are going to be times when you want to take one. And if you don't have a God, you're in trouble. There's going to be something in your life that you say, you know what? The only way to relieve this hurt or this pain is for me to take one. And if you don't got a God standing between you and that, you're going to take one. You got to tap into a power that will do for you what you can't do for yourself. Find that God. I don't pray in thee and thou and those. I'm not mad at y'all that do. But see, this is a relationship and a reliance on a power for Derek. For me, there's a difference between believing in God and relying on God. Some people believe in God, but they don't rely on him. You know, let me give you an example. Outside, if we took a wire and strung it from one light pole to another light pole, And a man got up there with a wheelbarrow. And he walked across the high wire pushing the wheelbarrow and he made it. And he turned around and looked at everybody here and said, do you believe I can make it back? You guys would say, yeah, I believe it. I seen it. So you believe he can make it back. But if you relying on him to make it back, get your ass in the wheelbarrow. That's the difference between believing in God and relying on God. If you believe in God, you can say all that, but when you're relying on him, that means if he don't do what you're depending on him to do, you're in trouble. I rely on God to keep me sober. My reliance, the book says, my reliance must be in a power greater than myself. You don't have to take it so biblical and take it so technical. Start where you at. You got to know where you at. You got to start where you at. If you lost, there's one question and one question only that you have to be able to answer. I drove 3.5 hours from Los Angeles to get here. If I would have been on that freeway and got lost, and I picked up the phone and called Bill, and I said, Bill, I'm lost. I don't know how to get to the meeting. It's one question and one question only that he's going to ask me, and I better have an answer to. Where you at? Because if I can't tell him where I'm at, he can't tell me how to get to where I'm trying to be. Oh, y'all not rocking with me. You got to know where you at. You got to know where you at. You got to know where you at. Where are you at in your recovery? Where are you at with your relationship with God? Where are you at with this process? Where you at? Stop faking the funk. If you don't believe, you ain't got to believe. You ain't got to believe in all that other stuff. Just find a power that's greater than you in the drink. Then you'll find out that that power is greater than you in this and greater than you in that. And he can solve all your problems. But right now, you need to solve the main problem. That's how do I keep a drink out my mouth? Find that God. Find that God. Find, the book says, may you find him now. It don't say after you work the 12 steps. It say, may you find him now. Now mean before you leave here tonight. Find him now. Whatever led you to this meeting, call that God. Find him now. This is a program of action. And you got to find a God. You ain't got to debate God with nobody. You ain't got to debate what his name is, what religion he's in. You ain't got to debate with all that. You know what? My ex-mother-in-law, my home group was the Never Too Early Big Book Workshop. And when I got sober, my sponsor made sure I got in this workshop. And I got in this workshop when I was less than a year sober. I've been in it every year since. When I got in this workshop, I would get there at 7 o'clock in the morning. I started being a parent. By that time, I had another child. And my ex-wife and my children were living with their mother-in-law. And I would pick my kids up on Friday. And I drop them off Sunday morning before I go to the workshop. And I started doing this consistently. I'm being a responsible parent. I'm working. I'm paying my child support. I'm picking my kids up. I'm being responsible. And they started to see the change in me. And every time I would drop my kids off, my ex-wife, her and her mother are super religious. Every other word is praise the Lord. And so when I dropped my kids off, her mother would say, praise the Lord, you brought them back. Thank you, God. She would do that. So after about a year of me being consistent, I went to drop my boys off, and her mother came out and said, you know, Derek, we are so proud of you. You've been consistently being a parent and being a productive member of your children's life. And we want you to know we're proud of you. And I said, thank you. And she said, you know, I know that what you need to do now is now that you've gotten yourself together, what you need to do now is come back to church. And I said, well, you know, I go to this big book workshop on Sunday mornings and it's been helping me these last couple years. And she said, oh no, I know about that AA stuff. That's all fine and well. But what you really need to do is you need to come back to church where people are fellowshipping and people are talking about God and people have living by some spiritual principles. And I looked her in the eye and I said, that's exactly where I'm going. You don't have to debate with nobody. I know what saved my life. If God leads me back to a religion, I will go. But right now, he led me to Alcoholics Anonymous. So for now, I think I'll stay. Find you a God of your own understanding. And that God will help you recreate your life. I live a life beyond my wildest dreams now. I live a life beyond my wildest dreams. I got out of treatment. And my brother was a police officer. He said he wanted to start a security company. And I have a background in accounting. And so I said, well, can I do your paperwork? And he said, I don't know about that. Because I was terrorizing everything and everybody. Everybody in my family. And my brother said, well, man, you know, you just got out of this treatment program. And I don't know. Let me think about it. And so then I called my dad and I said, look here, Dad, I know my aunt just passed away. I'm getting out of treatment in a couple months, and I want to buy the house that she lived in. And my dad said, I don't know about that. He said, you're just getting out of treatment. I said, Dad, just give me a chance. And he said, well, let me think about it. When I got out of treatment, I had my wife, who was my ex-wife at the time, because I told you what I had done to her. While I was in jail, on my birthday, I thought it was mail call. They called my name and I went up to the bars and they said, happy birthday. And they handed me my divorce papers. When I got out of treatment, she came back to me. I didn't have nowhere for her and my sons to stay. So what did I do? I asked my dad, could I buy this house? And my dad said, son, I don't know that that is going to be something you're capable of doing right now. But what I do believe is that you've changed. And I want you, since you're going to be working with your brother, if you can pay the rent for 2 years and not miss a payment, I'll sell you this house. Now, this is a house he bought for his mother before she died, and he gave to her sister after she died. So I went to work. I started a security company. I hired a lot of people in the fellowship. I've given a lot of people their first job in security in this fellowship. That security company got really, really big, and I became really, really successful. And after 2 years, I went to my father and I said, Dad, it's been 2 years to the day. I want to buy this house. And he said, let's go. And we went down and he sold me that house. I bought that house after living in it for 2 years, and I had my wife and my children living with me, and I was now being a productive member of society. After that, my brother decided he wanted to go back to the police department, and I didn't have nowhere else to go. So what did I do? I did what you guys taught me to do. I did what was in front of me. We dissolved that business, and I went back to my house that my father had sold me, and I got a computer, and I got a printer, and I started printing up some flyers. I put on a suit and a tie, and I walked around, and I got in my car, and I walked around neighborhoods and drove around looking for places that needed security. And I found a trailer park, and this trailer park had a guard shack out front, and that guard shack didn't have a guard in it. And I walked into that trailer park, and I said, excuse me. I talked to the manager, and I said, what's your occupancy rate? She says, we're about 65 to 70%. I said, the problem is this is a very bad crime-ridden neighborhood, and the reason why your occupancy rate is so low is probably because you don't have a guard and you got a guard shack. You guys need a guard. She said, you know what? I think you're right. I gave her my business card. She said, give me a quote. I went back to my house. I typed up the paperwork, wrote a quote, came back, handed her the quote, and she said, great, when can you guys start? I said, we can start this evening, ma'am. I came back home that night. I changed my clothes. I put on a security guard uniform, and I was her guard. She didn't know I didn't have no company. I'm going to tell you what God can do. What God can do, see, what God got for you, can't nobody keep from you. I didn't frown and be mad at my brother because he decided to go back to his career. I didn't sit and soak. I just did the footwork. From that account, I got a slew of Home Depot accounts, and my life changed dramatically. And I became very successful in the guard business. And then I decided I was going to get out of that business and get into real estate. And I started buying a bunch of houses and flipping houses, and then the market crashed. And then I didn't sit and soak on that. I had earned enough money that I could make some decisions about what I was going to do with my life. So I sat and I prayed and I meditated. And what I decided was I was just going to do what was in front of me. I'm driving down the 110 freeway. There's a big sign by the Coliseum that had a sign that said account temps. And I have a history, a background in accounting. And I said, I'm going to go apply. And I went to account temps and I took all their tests and I applied. And they called me back and they said, we got an assignment for you. It's going to be about 90 days. Do you want to take this assignment? I said, yes, I'll take that assignment. I took that assignment and I was done in 30 days. And at the end of the 30 days, the president of the company said, would you like a job? And I said, a job? He said, yeah, would you like a job? I said, well, I don't know. How much does it pay? He said, well, it pays six figures. I said, yeah, well, I'll be here Monday morning. I've been there 14 years. I work as a chief financial officer. The job I got, a master's degree is required. A CPA is preferred. I got a high school diploma. You can't tell me what God won't do. What God got for you, can't nobody keep it from you. Find you a God with some power. Find you a God. See, the God that I serve today is the one that tells the sun to rise, and then he tells it to set, and it obeys him. That's power. Find you a God that says, ocean, hold up, don't overrun the land because my people live here. That's power. Find you a God with some power. God can do anything but fail. My God owns the universe. I'm his child. I'm supposed to be rich. I don't know about you. Find you a God with some power. Find you a God with some power. And with that, I've been able to help a lot of people in this program. I speak all over the country. I enjoy this fellowship and I go where I'm called because I know without this program, I am nothing. I was able to buy the house on the hill and foreign cars and all motors, all that other stuff. But you know what I don't got? I don't got the obsession in my mind that drives me to go take one today. It has been lifted from me. What I don't got is to look behind my back and see who I've hurt or harmed today. Because every day I wake up and I say the same prayer. God, let me be of useful service to you and the people around me. God, my direction and my thoughts. This is what I say to God, and I know that God hears me because I ain't had a drink, hit, fix, or pill in 28 years. You can't tell me I ain't got the right one, baby. Find you a God. You can call him what you want to, but you better call. I love this program. I love this program, and my life is beyond my wildest dreams today. My two sons are grown now. I put one of them through college. I helped another one get a business. And they decided that they wanted to come back home. My son decided he wanted to be a lawyer. He wanted to pursue sports. He wants to be a sports attorney. So he's studying for the LSAT right now. I had a daughter after that. She became an attorney. I put her through college in Brooklyn Law. And now she's practicing law in the military. She's a JAG officer. I got another daughter after that. My daughter works for the county of Riverside. My children are all well. And my life is amazing. I decided that it can't be too many kings in one castle. And so when COVID hit, I decided, you know what? I need to get closer to the ocean so I can be closer to God. Because I like to see the sunrise in the morning and the stillness of the ocean. And so I bought a boat. When COVID hit, I bought a boat and I moved to the boat. And I've been living on the boat since COVID, and I named the boat social distancing because that's where I want to be. I want to be between me and God. As long as a boat and God is between everybody else, everything going to be all right. And that's what I do with my life. Every morning I wake up in prayer and meditation, and I watch God's beauty of this ocean. I'm not telling you this to brag. I'm telling you this to do what God can do with a life if you give him a chance. It's a difference between believing in God and relying on God. I'm relying on God to do for me what I can't do for myself. I'm going to share this story and I'm going to wrap up. Because I know y'all tired of hearing me run my mouth. There was a man. And he was an alcoholic. And he was an addict. And he fell in a hole. It was a deep hole. And he couldn't get out this hole. And he started climbing and clawing, trying to get out this hole. And he slipped and he fell back down to the bottom. And he knew he was in trouble. He didn't want to die like that. And he's sitting down in this hole. And all of a sudden, here comes a truck driver down the road. Truck driver pulled over, jumped out the truck to relieve himself. And he hears these cries for help. Help! Help! And the truck driver walked over and looked down in the hole and said, oh, God. The guy in the hole looked bad. He'd been there for some days. He was dirty, filthy, and nasty. And he looked up and he said, please help me get out of this hole. And the truck driver said, don't worry about it. My buddy got a truck stop up the road. I'm going to go get his tow truck. I'm going to come back. I'm going to whip the winch down and I'm going to pick you up and I'm going to get you out this hole. And the truck driver drove away. And he never came back. And the man in the hole said, I can't die like this. I'm better than this. I can get out this hole. And so he started climbing and clawing, and his fingernails started bleeding. And he got to the top, and he got his leg out the hole, and then he slipped, and he fell back down in the hole. He said, I'm going to die like this. I can't make it out this hole. And then all of a sudden, he hears somebody come down the road. It was a preacher singing Amazing Grace with a Bible under one hand, and he was just singing and coming, and the man in the hole said, help, help. And the preacher walked over and he looked down in the hole and he said, my sweet Jesus. The man looked terrible. He'd been in this hole for a week now. He was dirty, filthy, and nasty. And the preacher said, don't worry about it, son. My church is up the road. I'm going to go get some of my congregation members. We're going to get some ropes and we're going to pull you from this hole. And the preacher walked away and he never came back. And the man in the hole said, I can't die like this. I got one more try in me. And he started climbing. And he climbed. And he clawed. And he climbed. And he was almost to the top. And just as he got to the top, he slipped again. And he fell back down in the hole. And he laid there. And he said, I'm just going to die like this. I can't get out this hole. It's too deep. It's too high. And it's too hard. And here comes a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous coming from a meeting. Happy, joyous, and free, with a big book under one hand and a 12 and 12 under the other. And as he's walking, and all of a sudden he hears the cries for help, help, help. The sober member walked over to the hole and looked down, and he didn't say a word. And the man said, please help me. And the sober member walked away from the hole, and he put his big book down. He put his 12 and 12 down. He rolled up his sleeves and tightened up his shoelaces, and he took off running. And he wasn't running away from the hole. He was running towards the hole. And he ran towards the hole and he jumped up in the air and jumped right down in the hole. And the man in the hole said, why did you do that? Why did you come down here? I'm dying in this hole. I've been in this hole. I can't get out this hole. Why would you come down here? And the sober member did no ranting. He did no raving. And he sat there until the man became sweetly reasonable. And he said to the man this, the reason why I came down in this hole is because I've been in this hole before. And I came to show you a way out. And I'm here to share with you tonight. The reason why I came down in this hole is because I've been in this hole before. And I came to show you a way out. Alcoholics Anonymous is a way out when you had no way out. This is the way that for people like me and people like you to find our way back to God. This is an amazing program. This is an amazing process. I truly believe that God reached down under the freeway. He picked me up and he dusted me off and he gave me the life. You see me living for one reason and one reason only. Because he knew I would come here tonight and tell you that he did. And I truly believe that my God keeps me sober one day at a time. So the next time you see me, you'll know that he does. Thank you guys for letting me share.